Greetings, greetings, and salutations. This is Arrow. This show is called A Project Review with Q and Arrow. Thank you for tuning in today, and happy Thanksgiving. If you identify as a human being and you long to know your spirit, this is the show for you. This is the awakening of who we really are. Today, I want to just start off with some thank yous. Dawn and Doug, fabulous. This is, they are BBS Radio. They're my 100% technical support. I don't have a clue what they do. I just know they're very encouraging and supportive of what I'm doing, and I appreciate them. Thank you. And thank you to Sheila. I have my production manager back in the house today, and she stands firm at my right side, and I really appreciate her. And then thank you to the subscribers. Your support is golden in more ways than I can explain. It's not just the money energetics, but just the fact that you're willing to put the effort out to support what I'm doing and to help me keep this show on. That is a golden thank you to you. So this live show has transformed into what we're calling a safe table. It's a safe table for safe conversation. If you're inspired to come to the table for safe conversation, the numbers are 888-627-6008 or 323-744-4831. I'm just going to describe a safe table today. This is kind of a transition for us, but we want to bring to a safe table. We want to create a safe table and one that's going to have no judgment. So no name calling, no right or wrong. You do not have to agree with me. I invite for you to come on and share 3 minutes of your reality, even if it's different than mine. We just like to do no name calling, no right or wrongs, but we all have a right to come to the table, and I will defend, I might not agree with you, but I will defend to the death your right to have your say. Then we want deep listening. So I'm willing to listen to you. If after 3 minutes I might have a response, I want you to, you know, to be able to be heard also. So we take turns. We don't over-talk each other. No arguing, no combative conversation here. We're going to listen to each other. This is deep listening here. And then three, we want to recognize each spirit. Each and every spirit has value and equality. And we just want to, that's just another word for respect. We're going to respect each other. We're going to find the value in something, even if we don't agree with it. All right, let's show day. I have two questions on the table today. My two questions that we're going to talk about today is, how did I know I was Q's twin sister? And I'm just going to shoot out the other question, hoping to get to it today. How do I communicate with Source? So the first question at hand here, how did I know I was Q's twin sister? You know, it's really an easy answer if you have the prelude. So on my last show, last Sunday, was a show, my twin sister show is called A St. Thomas Show. And the question I set before on that show was, how did I know I was Yeshua's twin sister? That was an unraveling. That was me booking my show with BBS and then sitting endlessly writing inspirational writing for 2-3 weeks. I just wrote and hiked. I might have drove 90 miles in that time period. Otherwise, I was writing. And I was writing my life out. I envisioned my first episode just sharing my life. And of course, I envisioned it because Q was still on the radio. I was envisioning him being a guest on my first show, just so he could validate everything I had to say, because I didn't think anybody was going to believe that. There's no way, man. I have to have Q show up and validate what I'm going to say. And the Saturday that he did not show up, the very first Saturday, I had sitting on my table a very direct question to him about me being Yeshua's twin sister. And then we all know the story. He didn't show up to answer my question that day. I found that summer it was a big chunk. I'm supposed to go public. I was starting a show and I'm going to go to the world and tell them I was Jesus's twin sister. I just, woo, doggy. I had a wrestling, and I took the summer off. I called it, I'm going back to a normal life. All I did all summer was waitress, hike, and slumber party with my 96-year-old grandma. My cat and I would slumber party and watch baseball, eat popcorn. It was a great summer. It was a good break. So I got back on the train as soon as the summer was over. And first thing I did, first Saturday, I got on with the Q men. They were playing the first Saturday. And I just listened every single show intently. I cheerleaded everybody on. If they were offering a call in, I would call in and I would say, "This is Traveling Shelley. I'm back on the train. I'm your little sister. I'm your family. I'm your little sister. And I'm here now." And I just reached out to every Q host I could and contacted them as the little sister. And so I've been in contact with Q. I recognized this summer as I took a break that he was still with me. And I was in direct contact with him. I was communicating back and forth, which my second question today, how do I communicate to source? I'll be able to spell that out a little bit better. I've worked hard on that for a few weeks. I've just taken for granted how I communicate all my life, and I never had to explain it to anybody. So I've been working on how to get that into words. And, you know, I'm going to give Dawn and Shane some credit for me really waking up to my part in this. I called into BBS Radio about a subscription or something. It was business. And Don just asked me point blank. He said, "Have you talked to Q lately?" Did you guys hear the silence? Because that was how I started my response, was silence. And then I went, then my response was, Don, why are you asking me this? And then I realized I was stuttering. I normally don't. I've stuttered about 3 or 4 times in this vessel's life. And I knew when I do that, that it's extreme anxiety, maybe even panic. And so I just took a deep breath. I've been practicing the head drop for years, and I don't have to recite the command anymore. I can just breathe and come down to my heart. And so then I come down to my heart and I said, you know, the answer to that question is, of course I have. Haven't you? Now, he didn't answer my question. He came right back at me and he said, so how do you talk to him? Do you use a telephone? No. The only time I talked to Q on the telephone was when he was on the radio. So, and then I had to talk to Shane about that because, well, I think a couple of weeks later, I called Don and asked him, so do you talk to Q? And he said, man, I haven't talked to Q since April. And I heard papers rustling April. And I said, 2025? He goes, yeah, his last show. That's the last time I talked to him. And I was like, really? Huh. Because I just thought Don was communicating with him too. So I asked Shane, I was like, Shane, man, I know you're communicating, but isn't everybody communicating with him? And we had a little conversation about that. And wow, to my surprise, I mean, I literally thought every single listener on Q shows, the regular callers that had started their own Q shows, were all in direct communication with Q. And to my surprise, that might not be the case. I'm not sure who is or who isn't, but it's not near as many people as I thought. And I had to really acknowledge that. Now, in my story, my life story, I had recognized as I did all that inspirational writing in my life story for a few weeks, I identified him in my entire life. Q was in four main male vessels throughout my life. I described those as dragons. I gave that story in the very first project review show. I had four dragons, and I know them to be my brother Q. He gave me good training. I've been trained to be here. So this conversation I had with Q one day was real simple. He said, "So who were you 2,000 years ago?" I said, "Your twin sister." And he said, "And if there's no such thing as time and 2,000 years doesn't exist, who are you today?" Did you hear my response? Silence again. I was silent for a second. I'm a smart cookie. I knew what he wanted. I knew the answer was twin sister, and I just couldn't say it. I said, "Your little sister?" Now, when I communicate, I don't hear voices. I want to be really clear about this. I do not hear voices in my head. If any of you are listening to voices in your head, I want to claim to run to your heart. Observe voices. I don't hear voices, and I don't hear communication doesn't come to me in English. I have to translate. I've been practicing that type of communication since 1997. I had a biological father that passed, and he came to me communicating, and I'll tell that story on the next question. So I spit out, I said, "Your little sister?" And I got a frowny face, a smirk. I don't know, eyes rolling. I don't know about eyes rolling, but if I was going to put it into English, I would say frowny face or a smirk is his response. Again, just me wearing my pull-ups and not wanting to wear my big girl panties. You know, I'm comfortable as the little sister. I grew up with five uncles. They were like my older brothers. And throughout my entire life, I've had a group of men hanging out with me, being my friends, supporting me, taking care of me. I just am comfortable in that role. And I came to everybody's Q shows claiming to be a little sister because I was still in my pull-ups. And to be honest with you, it was a big chunk to acknowledge that I was going to come forward as Yeshua's twin sister, but it was even harder for me to admit that I was Q's twin sister. I longed to be part of the Q family. I wanted support from all the Q show hosts. They were all taking turns being on each other's shows. They all support each other. A lot of them are in communication and back channels. Some of them had even talked to each other in person. And I wanted to be a part of the family. And I wanted their support. I tried to throw a big party in Houston, thinking that was a centering point for everybody in the country. And I invited all the Q family and some guests and some callers even. And a couple people were going to come, but it wasn't enough. And it wasn't the real people that I wanted to be in touch with. It wasn't the ones that I really needed the support from. Of course, that was just my thinking that I needed support. I had exactly the support that I needed. The people that were with me, that I was communicating with, the physical people in my life, the Q trainers that have been a huge support, they never questioned it, and they accepted me the way I was, and I even said to Shane, I said, "Nobody's going to believe me." And he's like, "Why isn't anybody going to believe you?" I'm like, "Did you hear what I said?" He said, literally, like Jesus's twin sister and Q's twin sister. No one's going to believe me. But anyway, so that was last winter. That was like November and December. I'm talking to Q about it. And you know, somewhere in there, I had to put on my big girl panties. And I had to step into my shoes. I literally stepped into my shoes today and I realized that I have made it farther in this assimilation than I have in any assimilation since I've been on this planet. I've been on this planet for eons. I came here with a mission. I came here to participate in human experience and together create a new earth in peace. I am here for peace on earth. I am here to help establish, create, participate. I came in just like you, the listeners. I had memories wiped. My family was targeted. I've gone through things. I have gone through things. The first day I ever talked to Shane, he was a guest, or he was on Being Inspired by Q with Q Friends, and I called in and I made a comment about being a crash test dummy for Q. And he immediately had a response for that. And he kind of explained it. He kind of explained why. And what he was explaining to me is what I know as a bridge human. And I knew I was a bridge human, but I never really, I was like, wow, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. I say it as a joke. I think it's cute to say I'm a crash test dummy for Q. Now, he doesn't really like that. I'm going to put that out there. My brother really doesn't like that. I've had some other cute little joke labels that he really didn't like. And I am highly directed. If I give you my other label, which I'm not doing today, because then I have to back it up with what my brother has to say about it. And I'm not ready yet. A crash test dummy for Q. I've just gone through things. You know, I have extra sensory perception, And it's just recording data as I'm here in a human vessel. I am recording all experience, all sense experiences, and it's being recorded as data and sent to my team. My team is within me. Sometimes I refer to it as the office. And this is what's happening with the data. Everything ingested, everything sounded, seen, taste, the etheric around me. It is all analyzed, dissected, integrated, investigated, inventoried, cataloged, categorized, microscoped, and recorded. And I'm going to explain, this is something I love to put out there. I was a child in school before they came out with some kind of label about attention deficit. They were not giving kids medicine and labeling them with mental illnesses like something's wrong with you. And I'm going to explain to you why I couldn't focus and read a book. So when I was in first grade, the teacher would give us time to read books. And so it was quiet time. So I'd be trying to read my book. And again, I'm explaining that I've been engineered, my vessel's engineered, and I'm trained. So how I am going to explain this extrasensory perception I have, this hearing that I have, I'm reading a book, and it's like if you can imagine being in the Vietnam War and you're in a jungle with a gun and you're sitting still and you're listening, you're going to hear a stick crack. You're going to hear, and you're going to look, you're going to hear a blade of grass bend, and you're going to look. You're going to hear a bird make a noise. You're going to hear a leaf blow in the wind. And you're going to look. And I have that training. So as a child in first grade, I'm trying to read. And instead of focusing on what I'm reading, I hear some papers rustling. I look, it's my teacher at her desk. I hear some kind of shifting noise. I look over and the kid next to me squirming in his desk. I hear a sniffle. I look over. And it's the kid that's always picking his nose because he's got a runny nose all the time and he's sniffling. I hear somebody drop a pencil. I hear high heels coming down the hallway. and I couldn't focus and read that book. This is really significant here. I want people to understand that have either these labels, attention deficit, or they have children that way. It's just extrasensory perception. It's not something to label as wrong or bad, and it's certainly not something to take pills over. Those pills will dumb you down and dull your senses. Okay. Great information I got out there. Love it, love it, love it. I'm just here. This is my disclaimer. I'm here sharing. My words are, it's just my truth. It's my reality and it's my experience. I'm not here to get you to believe me. And I'm certainly not here to tell you what your truth, your reality, or your experience should or could be. I'm just here sharing mine. I'm hoping that in me being able to translate my experiences into English, into words, and explain them the best that I can. Sometimes it's a challenge. Sometimes I don't have words that really fit what I'm trying to describe. But I'm hoping that it helps people. I'm hoping that you find something in my words that might help you find your truth, find your reality. We are all creators here. We are spirit beings. We are light spirit beings first and a physical body second. And we are creators of our own realities. And you have a right to create your reality. I do not know what yours is or should be. I am ready for my second question, because this one could probably take 4 hours. If I don't get to all of the answer on this, there's always another Sunday. How do I communicate with source? So my definition of source today, I've had a presence with me at all times. I've known it. I can go back. When I tell you my age as a child, I relate it to whatever house I lived in. So I know kind of what ages I was when we would move to a different home. And so I know that in this bedroom, I would have been like 3, 4, or 5. And it was definitely before I started kindergarten. I knew I was a lucid dreamer. I actually had labels before kindergarten. I had 2 different labels to describe the 2 type of dreams that I had. I had the one where I go to sleep at night and it's uncontrollable. Like sometimes I even had monsters chasing me a lot when I was a kid. And I discovered if I quit watching spooky movies with my uncles before I went to bed, I'd quit having monsters chasing me. But I had lots of monsters chasing me as a child in my uncontrollable dreams. Then I had these other dreams that I now know as lucid dreaming, but I didn't have that label till I was in my late 20s. As a child before kindergarten, I had my own labels. It's just nobody ever shared them with me and nobody ever backed me up on my labels. And I don't even remember what they were. I just knew. I remember having 2 different types of dreams and having a label before kindergarten for those. And then there was always a presence with me. I was always communicating with a source, with a presence, now I know it as a team. I always had, and I'm not talking about the childhood friends. I had childhood friends that had names, and there was something else. There was something in me that I identified, and I communicated back and forth, had conversation maybe. It was before anybody ever said the word God to me, so I didn't recognize it as that word, because nobody had taught me that word yet. And then, of course, growing up, I get the word God and religion. And then later when I got sober, I was getting sober, I was anti-Christianity. I want to be really clear, I was not anti-Jesus. I knew Jesus was perfect, unconditional love, and that was not the same as Christianity, which was what people would always be telling me, these things that I didn't agree with. And so getting sober, I needed something, and I called it Great Spirit. I studied a lot of Native American rituals and understandings that they carried, and that worked for me really well for a while. Later, I would call this presence creative intelligence, the universe, creator of all things. And then I, at one point, would call it higher self. That one usually didn't ever go over well with the general public. And now being on a Q train, prime creation, prime creator, and today my chosen word is source. I'm questioning creation lightship. I know that we are all created on creation lightship, and we all come from creation lightship. All light beings, all spirit was created there. So maybe creation lightship is another word for God. That one just kind of fell into my page this morning, and I just am questioning it. It's also, hey, if you want to share your take on that, you're welcome to call in. My first identifiable communication, form of communication came from a book. My second dragon, when I was 12, gave me my first Richard Bach book. It was called Jonathan Livingston Seagull. It's a beautiful book. It's cute. It's very small, very simple, very simple, simplistic wording, great for children. Same with the second book I read by Richard Bach, is called Illusions. The thing that I got out of Jonathan Livingston Seagull at the age of 12, the thing that I got out of that, I mean, it's just a cute little story about a seagull that he wouldn't fight for food scraps on the beach with the rest of the clan, with the rest of the seagulls, and so he was outcasted. He got a lot of flack for that, and I related to that because I was always in trouble with my mother for not eating. In the summer between second and third grade, I didn't have a babysitter. Mom decided I was independent enough. And at first thing she'd do, she'd come home, throw her purse on the table and go to the fridge and start my lecture every Monday through Friday. We went through this Monday through Friday. So what'd you eat today? You didn't eat anything. Did you eat anything? What'd you eat today? She worked really hard. I mean, she put all the food I liked in there. And, you know, I can make a sandwich and I can boil water or heat raviolis or whatever. But, you know, I was always playing. I didn't have time to come in and eat. And she would go to great lengths. She would, like, make things for me, then put it in there. So she'd stuff celery with cream cheese. I loved it. And she'd put it in there. So all I had to do was open the fridge and take the food and eat it. And I still wouldn't. And I never, as a kid, I was like, I never understood why I was always in trouble for this. Because I'm like, if I get hungry, I know where the food is. You've pointed out every single day, Monday, I know where the food is. Like, why am I always in trouble? Anyway, so what I got out of the book, though, age 12, we don't die. We don't die. That's the moral in the story. And I couldn't even have told you that. I used to do book reports every time I changed grades or changed schools. I'd pick that book again. And I did in ninth grade, I had a teacher ask me a question about the book. And I couldn't answer it. And it was so weird because I'd been doing book reports on it for years. And I knew the book inside and out. And I knew it told me that I don't die, that I just become, you know, I just go on to the next life. I become a bigger, brighter, beautiful seagull. I'm more graceful. I can do 5 cartwheels instead of 3. I can fly faster than I used to, but it was always just going from one life to the next. And that's really what the teacher was trying to get out of me. That, again, I couldn't put that into words, but I did have that as a life understanding. And then in high school, I get Richard Bach's Illusions. And so this book is about a guy flies a plane. Richard Bach flies planes. Obviously, a lot of his books are about flying. And he's flying biplanes for passengers and he gets permission on some a farmer's land and he flies for the locals and that's how he eats. And another plane shows up one day and the guy's name is Don and he used to be a messiah, but he quit his job. And so these two guys are hanging out giving flights to the locals and so Richard asks him one day, so how do you become a master? Like, you know, do you go to school or is there like a book or something, you know? And he's like, yeah, they give you the Messiah's handbook. He's like, really? So Don gives him the book and it's just these little phrases. I should have glasses on right now. They're just a bunch of little phrases. It's not from cover to cover. And it says things like, your friends will know you better in the first minute you meet than your acquaintances will know you in 1,000 years. Or another one says, you teach best what you most need to learn. And so Richard says one day, he goes, Don, I noticed something strange about the book. The pages don't have numbers on them. No, he said, you just open it and whatever you need most is there. Richard exclaims, a magic book? No, you can do it with any book. You can do it with an old newspaper if you read carefully enough. Haven't you done that? Hold some problem in your mind, then open any book handy and see what it tells you? Huh. So I've done that all my life, ever since high school, ever since I read that, ever since I had this book. This book that has been that I've been reading since this winter again, and it tickles me to no end. The words in it are like, there's the word ascension in it. I never used the word ascension until I was on a Q train. And it just really solidifies with me the light of source in the author of these books, Richard Bach. So ever since then, ever since high school, I would randomly pick up any text, any writing, and I would just, without looking at the book, I would hold a question. I might repeat it out loud or I hold it inside and I randomly open the book and point at a word. Sometimes the one word is the answer. Sometimes I have to read the whole sentence to get the answer. Sometimes I read a paragraph. But again, anywhere from one word to a paragraph, it has always worked for me, always. In all of my years in this vessel that I've been practicing that, there was one time I had a book and I asked, Great Spirit, what does this book hold for me? And I read it. I read the whole verse. It had a lot of these and thous and thys and those. Thy this, thy that, though this. You know, the author, it said King James on it. And just my understanding and my knowledge of King James is he was not a nice guy. And that's all I'm going to say about that guy. But you know, I was confused about the answer. Now, this has always worked for me. I was sober and, using Great Spirit as my label for source. And I trusted that that was the answer. I just didn't get it. And I said something. I just talked to God like my friend. And I said, Great Spirit, I just, you know, I know that you always provide me the answer. And I know that this is the answer. I just don't understand it. And if you want me to have clarity about this answer today, you'll provide that. And, you know, I don't know back then that I ever got it. Today, what I know is that book held confusion for me. And that's the answer to that. Number two in my, how do I communicate with source? So in my 20s, I was in a bedroom by myself listening to an album. Boy, am I really dating myself today, aren't I? Sure am. I was listening to an album by Bob Marley and the Wailers. Love that album. But I had this experience where I had a thought or a question, and then it seemed like the words in the song just immediately, whatever, as soon as I asked the question, the song answered the question. And I thought, wow, did that just happen? And then it answered that question. And I was like, for real, like, this is, wow, okay. And I sat there that afternoon and was having, I was not taking hallucinogens. I'm going to throw that out there. But again, it's one of those experiences that I remember. And I have explained this before. This is something I've put into words before because it was different. It was a different type of experience for me. But I was literally asking questions over and over, and the music was answering it. Now, also in that experience that afternoon in my room, I also felt a presence outside of me come into the room. And I went to panic. The stomach came up to the throat or the heart. I don't know. Inside. My insides locked up and it left immediately. I've always wondered what that was, and I always wondered what could have been in that moment. I do not know. I have not ever had that particular experience since then. And also, in that afternoon, I'm going to come to number three, my third form of communication. The other thing that began to happen that afternoon with the music answering my questions, I also had a clock that had numbers, not a face clock. It was back then the kind where the numbers flip over so you can see the four digits, and one might be blank if it's, you know, only three digits of the time, but the numbers kind of flipped over as time went on. And a known number, a number that meant something for me, like my birth date or something that was a really recognizable number pattern, showed up on the clock. So not only was the song answering my questions, there was also this symbolism resonance that was happening with the digits on the clock. And so a lot of times that happens, whether, you know, I just have pattern recognitions with certain numbers. They're personal numbers for me. It's not anything that you're going to find in a numerology book. My communication of number patterns is my own personal source of communication. And that's what I'm explaining here. As I'm explaining the ways that I communicate, I encourage you to find your own system of communication. You know, somebody in the project team who is going to receive the projects and communicate them with Q kind of wanted direction from Q on how to do it. And it's like Q or Source, I will interact, okay? That did not go on my list of, if I say God, Great Spirit, Creative Intelligence, the Universe, Creator, I'm going to say Q also, because Q frequency comes directly from Source. Directly from Source. Now, we called a man Q because he came and he said he didn't have a name. And the guy who was, that I first heard interviewing him, said, well, what, we got to call you something. What do we call you? And he said, well, call me Q. But he's directly from Source. And so I might say Q now. But he wanted directions on how to communicate with Q. And I couldn't answer that. Actually, I think that question is really how I got to this question today. How do I communicate with Source? I never really put all this into words before. And to my surprise, I found seven different ways that I do this, but it's mine. You know, there's other ways that I hear from other people. The one that comes to mind that I don't do is dowsing. I know people that use dowsing. So these are all just communication forms that we use to communicate with the inner playful learning creature inside of us, our true self, our spirit. We are communicating with our spirit, our source. And we develop our own communication patterns. I really want to encourage that. I'm just trying to put mine into words so I can say, hey, I don't know, this kind of works for me. This is how I've done it this long and this part of my life. Number patterns. Number four is I receive comms through other people. This would be the one that stands out really clearly to me is when I got sober. I was 25 years old and I was in a hospital getting ready to have my jaw wired shut because I had a broken jaw. I don't remember getting a broken jaw. It was in a blackout. I had become a mean, angry drunk by the time I was 23. And it was pretty scary the last year that I drank. It was very life-threatening for me and innocent people around me. But I was 25 years old in a hospital, and I seen my death standing in front of me, staring at me. And I was scared. Now, I also want to say in 12-step circles, they give fear a bad rap, and fear saved my life. I was scared of dying at 25 years old. I was scared, and I got to an Alcoholics Anonymous program. And so support groups, which I've been in many, I didn't just stop at that program. I've experienced a lot of different types of groups. But I also was taught from the very beginning from a sponsor to not judge the people when they're talking. Because in an hour of all these different people talking, God is going to talk to me. But I don't know who he's going to talk to me through. And if I'm thinking, man, that guy really smells and that guy stinks, or oh God, that homeless guy there, he's drunk. He just came in because it's warm and he wanted a free cup of coffee. You know, but if I'm thinking crazy judgment things in my brain, I might miss the message that God's going to share with me. I learned really early on to listen to every single thing someone says. And that is how I start my meetings. Actually, they do a moment of silence at the beginning, and I call out to whoever, source, great spirit, God, and say, God, please help me to hear what I need to hear, say what I need to say, and keep an open mind. And now today I might say, spirit within, help me hear what I need to hear, say what I need to say, and keep an open mind. And I literally am going to get direction that day. Now, it doesn't just have to be in a meeting. It doesn't have to be in a support group. You know, the other day I'm working on these windows outside. I'm scraping and painting, and it's a brick wall. It's framed into a brick building. And I have to do caulking between the frame and the brick building. And the stuff that's on there crumbled and was like paste and crumbly. And I had never seen this type of caulking before. And I had some questions. I'd never worked with a brick wall before. And I had questions. And like the next day before I started work, I walked up to the little coffee shop, got me a little frittata and had some breakfast, and was walking back. And lo and behold, there's a brick building and a guy with a caulking gun. And I was like, hey, I'll go ask him. And you know, I got the answers I was looking for. He had all of the answers that I was just asking the day before, because I'd come across something. I needed to know it in the project that I was undertaking. And there it was. We draw to us what we need. We draw to us what we need when we need. when you're in the flow, may the force be with you. When you're in the flow, man, it just is all there. It just all connects. The synchronicities are there. It's just a matter of being in the moment, being present, not being off in my head somewhere, which is usually how I spent my life, was always drift. I love to dream and I'm in my head a lot. So it's always a practice for me, staying present, staying in my heart. And then I see it. I see all the synchronicities. It's just a wonderful way to walk. Number five, I'm trying to think of where this started. Maybe my mother, when I was young, she was kind of what you would maybe label New Ager. I'm not a big fan of New Ager. I wouldn't call myself a New Ager, but I did have a lot of modalities and a lot. I loved rocks. I loved crystals. I got my first crystal when I was 18 years old, and I started studying the different rocks and the different associations with chakras. Ooh, which this is a great opportunity to throw out. I'm a rainbow, and my understanding of the chakra, the whole thing about chakras. You know, I used to study the colors and the rocks and which rock went with which chakra. And I might do work on my throat chakra. I might do work on my heart chakra. I might ground myself in the base chakra. And it's my understanding today that that is really a debunking of term, that it just helps us separate. It's like I am a crystalline rainbow, crystalline technology. I am a rainbow. Now, if you looked at a beautiful rainbow, would you ever take yellow out and pull it aside and look at yellow? I mean, you might have a beautiful yellow, but when you turn back to look at your rainbow, is it still a rainbow? I mean, I can't imagine having a rainbow without yellow. I don't think you would. And I don't want to separate who I am today. I'm a beautiful rainbow. And so I don't do chakra work. If I do any chakra work, it's always to harmonize and integrate all of me in a wholeness. Always. It's always my purpose to integrate, harmonize, optimize, and energize all of my chakras as a whole. Okay, so animal cards. I think my mom might have had a tarot deck when I was little. It was a little more complicated. I never learned tarot, but I did when I got sober, I prayed to Great Spirit and I studied Native American ways. And there was a deck of cards called Animal Totem Cards. And it was Native American teachings. Matter of fact, the credits in the beginning of the book, gave credit to some natives in Canada who I had also had references to in other native books that I had acquired. And so I got this deck of cards and I just had a blast with it, finding my animal totems, learning the medicines of the animals. And I still have the deck of cards. As I was doing this writing, I was trying to remember how many times I've used it in the last 10 years. And I maybe have pulled out the cards twice for myself in the last 10 years. So I don't use a deck of cards. That doesn't mean, but that might be your way. I know other people that use cards and maybe that's their form of communication. For me though, I still use the book and the animals. When I have a crow that comes and sits and he just insists on cawing at me and cawing at me and cawing at me and cawing, I'm like, okay, I hear you. I hear you. I got a crow talking to me today. And I know his medicine is law. And it says something about reflect the difference between man's law and Great Spirit's law. But then I don't remember the other stuff. So if I'm really curious, I'll go grab my book and I'll read. And driving down the road, if I see animals. Now, lots of animals I see on a regular basis, and those are the ones I'll know the medicine of. I had a dog that was part coyote, so I learned coyote medicine really well, which is trickster, and it's always self-sabotage and playing tricks on yourself. And the art of coyote medicine is learning to laugh at yourself. I had a beautiful little dog for 12 years that was part coyote. So he taught me to laugh at myself really well. All right. Number 6, communication with beings not in a physical body. I have a joke about this. I say that I talk to dead people. But it's a joke because there's no such thing as dead people. It's just not a thing. You know, we might disengage from our body. The body, you know, we might let go of the body. So in 1997, my biological father let go of his body. He had a heart attack, and I got the call. A girlfriend of mine got a hold of me. I was at work, and she had the pleasure of telling me that my dad had passed and his brother was trying to contact me. And she asked me if I needed a ride. She wanted me to come pick me up from work, and I said yes. So I'm sitting outside on the ground waiting for a ride, and I hollered out at my dad. It was my biological dad. So I didn't know him very well. I met him when I was 18, and I had 4 physical contacts within the time I was 18 to the time he passed. And so I didn't experience what most people would experience as loss, you know, the father that raised you and a more closer connection. This father really was never physical in my life. So I know that that's part of why this communication was able to happen, is because I did not have a lot of emotional attachment to the loss of a physical father that never was physical in my life. But I hollered out at him. He lived in Minneapolis, and they have 9 months of winter, and I had no desire to go move near my dad. Yuck. Too much cold for me. But he was always going to retire to Oregon. And one of the visits I had with him is we took a train to Oregon, rented a car, and drove up and down the coastline. We checked all the different cities. He was gathering all the information. He was an artist. He was looking into art communities. We checked out Coos Bay. We checked out Eugene. And we just had a beautiful vacation. And I really, after the trip, felt like maybe I knew who my dad was. He was a beautiful human vessel. Very, very beautiful. He was physically beautiful, but he was a good man. And he was very gentle and kind-hearted. And I had the pleasure of taking that trip with him. So I call out to him, "Dad, why did you leave me? I didn't get to know you better." My intentions were, when he retired, he was going to move to Oregon, and so was I, because it was a beautiful trip. It was a beautiful state. It was gorgeous, and all the places that he was talking about moving to were absolutely beautiful. So he came to me immediately. And I've got a little warning here about time. Nice. So let's see. We're going to end with 6. And we're going to end with what my biological father came to tell me immediately when I cried out to him. What a wonderful day. It's a glorious day. Happy Thanksgiving, guys. I woke up realizing that I had never made it this far before. In all the assimilations, I made it here today. It's a glorious day. Thank you, BBS. Thank you, Sheila. And thank you, listeners and subscribers. And that's a wrap. Love, love, love.